You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guest is István Fazekas. István Fazekas is a dynamic author and speaker. He served on the focus group for the book Still Here by counterculture icon Ram Dass and has studied with yogis and Buddhist teachers for nearly 20 years. He has served on the faculty of the National Holistic Institute, Western Institute of Science and Health, and Sonoma College. A well-known author, his book, The Alkalizing Diet, Your Life is in the Balance, is filled with readily applicable tools exploring the body-mind-spirit connection and role of spiritual development in our physical well-being. His latest book, Edgar Cayce and the Yoga Sutras, explores the Yoga Sutras, the Yamas and Niyamas, and the purpose of meditation, together with 12 Steps to Enlightenment from Cayce's Visionary Psychic Readings. István will be joining John Van Auken in Virginia Beach from September 9th to the 11th for the Spiritual Breakthrough Intensive Conference, which will explore Edgar Cayce's techniques for making direct contact with what he called the universal consciousness. Thanks for coming on the show today.
My pleasure being with you.
You have an article that's going to be in the July to September issue of Venture Inward magazine titled Attending Service at the Temple of the Heart. Could you tell us about that?
Well, you know, it's real easy for us to get too intellectual about things when we get into the spiritual path and spiritual teachings and spiritual philosophies. And in the teachings of the East, of Asia, you know, there's a really central part of getting closer to God consciousness. And that is, you can get all of the philosophical pieces in place. You can be, you know, a really proficient meditator, do lots of things. But until you sort of ignite the heart, until you get your emotions kind of involved with spirit, you always stay on sort of, I don't want to maybe say a lower plane, but you just don't really get to experience the thing that these great mystics talk about until you sort of step into the heart in a greater way and try and understand the world from the heart.
So then the temple of the heart, I guess that's a temple in each of us.
It's the temple within you, that's right, and it's the center of your spirit is what it is.
What are the three essential elements for enlightened awareness?
Well, again, when we think about putting together all these great teachings from these wonderful, wonderful masters of the East, one thing that we look at is that everything is essentially a manifestation of God in one form or another. And I understand that that word, you know, might throw some people off. They like to use different words for it, and it really doesn't matter what word we use. There's a great analogy that's used by the wonderful Bengali saint Ramakrishna, where he talks about five different people on the perimeter of a lake. And one person calls this liquid stuff that he's pulling out of the lake water, and somebody else calls it oh, and somebody else calls it jal. And they're arguing, of course, about the names of the water, but they're not arguing about water. So whatever term we want to give to this pervasive universal force, God works as fine as spirit or Hashem or Brahma or Satchitananda or whatever else was used for it. But understanding that this force is permeating everything. And of course, you can see this in the human body on lots of different levels. You know, your body right now, it's operating with an intelligence that you're not in charge of. Have you ever thought about that?
Hmm.
You know, your cells, trillions of cells right now have an intelligence, and they're communicating with one another. Your immune system is doing this in an absolutely phenomenal way. Your immune system is sending out scavengers all throughout your body to take a look and see what's supposed to be there and what's not supposed to be there. And it's smart enough most of the time to know to attack the things that aren't supposed to be there and leave the things alone that are supposed to be there. But even your very heartbeat, you're not in charge of your heartbeat. It happens all on its own. So there's a miracle just in the human body of this force, God force, that's happening through you. And we don't take enough time to stop and really appreciate that and really see that. And once we see that in the human body, how that works, and I just gave you a couple examples, but there are, you know, really dozens and dozens of examples of this in the human body. Once we see this in the human body, then we can start seeing how the same exact thing is taking place in nature all around us. It's happening with, you know, just forces of physics, gravity, anti-gravity, atmospheric pressure, electromagnetic belts, you know, the Van Allen belts and all these things around the Earth. It's going on so many levels. So one of the first things to really understand coming from the heart, understanding the world from the heart, is seeing that spirit is reflecting itself back to you on so many levels. And it really changes you when you stop and start appreciating that.
It's interesting because you'd think the people that might see this the most would be physicists, analyzing the depths of complexity of the universe and universal laws. But you don't seem to see a lot of this in physics textbooks, what you're talking about.
Yeah, and you know, there was a movement quite a number of years ago where, you know, the church had been in charge of defining all of the myths around reality and the universe and how things came into being. And what happened is, you know, very rational people showed up and decided to throw the baby out with the bathwater and said, we're going to approach this from a really rational, intellectual perspective and take this idea of a creative force out. And you're right. Really, the ones that should have the most awe and the most reverence for spirit and all the just unbelievable ways that it manifests, they should be the scientists. Because they're the ones that are, you know, working with this on a regular basis. Certainly, I would think the astrophysicists, you know, and people that are studying space and all of that would have to have some sort of an appreciation that there's something that's beyond just the human intellect, human power, that is keeping all of this going, making all of this happen. But unfortunately, people have divorced themselves from that, and we have this big philosophical sort of schism in our, you know, in our culture now, where you either have to have a completely religious view of reality and science or not. It's one or the other. And of course, my perspective is there's a middle ground where both of those things can be integrated quite well. But I think you're right. I think the scientists, and there are scientists, I've talked to them actually. You know, they don't come out publicly and state this, but personally, they really do have a very strong understanding of what we're talking about, that there's something mysterious that's keeping this all together. There's an intelligence. There's something that's happening that we can't quite get our intellect around.
You mentioned in the article something called ego amnesia. Could you tell us about that?
Ego amnesia. Well, you know, it's very difficult to try and see things from a perspective outside of the ego. Part of spiritual practice is to do things that help us forget self. Now, most people probably are aware of this if they do something like serve other people. You know, you're involved in serving. You see the benefits and the joy that comes from just being there to serve and help other people. And for that period of time, you kind of get a certain energy from that. You get kind of personally charged from doing that. You're working for something that's greater than your own self-satisfaction. So that kind of ego amnesia is one of the states of consciousness that is recommended us to get more into in order to really get into the heart more and understand the heart in a deeper way. But yeah, that's that kind of selfless service. I think you probably see that in the case you read quite a bit. He recommends that, and it's one of his preferred ways to attain higher consciousness. And of course, those that know the readings know that that's one of his favorite recommendations for curing depression. It's for, you know, go out and serve someone. Go out and do something for someone other than yourself, and it helps reignite the heart. It helps get you in touch with something bigger than just your own personal sort of awareness.
And that's an idea that may not be accepted that easily in our modern society, where we want to stay indoors more and kind of sit in front of the computer and the TV and interact with reality that way.
Yeah, that's a real small reality when we do that, you know. We need to. We're built as tribal people, as social creatures. The only way that we're really going to come into a greater consciousness and a greater awareness is to be involved with others and find ways to serve each other.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with István Fizikas.
Well, we're here to do two things. We're here to personally overcome our self-centeredness. Once we've done that, we are then encouraged to go and serve others. And this is true not only in the ancient Christian tradition, but it's true in the Buddhist tradition. You know, there's the schools of Buddhism got fragmented because there was a group of people that said that your primary goal here is personal enlightenment, and everything comes second to that. And then the second group of Buddhists said, well, if that was true, the Buddha would never have left his own, you know, never have left the Bodhi tree. He would have never left his own personal cave. He would have achieved enlightenment for himself and then said, you know, forget it to the rest of the world. But he didn't. After he got a certain awareness, he spent the rest of his life, and if you read the Buddhist history, around 50 years of his life he spent teaching and serving and being a vessel for other people's transformation. So that's our job, too, is to personally transform ourselves through the heart and then find ways to be useful to other people.
I was thinking about how meditation, some people might try to deny self through meditation, but you can't just do that every day and expect that to be it. There's a next step beyond that.
Yeah, and I probably wouldn't look at it about, if I'd say, denying self. I think it's really understanding who you are, which is different than denying self.
Ah.
If you just think of yourself as your personality, you're looking at the surface of the water. But what spiritual practice is about, it's about diving in underneath the water and realizing that, you know, what you thought was just a superficial pond is, you know, 4,000 feet deep. So I wouldn't look at it in terms of denying self. It's really about knowing who you are on a deeper level past your personality. Because your personality and my personality and everybody listening to this, your personality is just a Dixie cup. And that Dixie cup is going to be crushed once you leave the body. It's just serving a purpose right now to give you the drink of water of this incarnation. That's it. And once you go back into a deeper place, once you go back to a soul level awareness, this is just one page in a really big book. So you don't want to think that the page is the book. There's a whole lot more to us than just our personality and our present day circumstances. So I wouldn't look at it about denying self. I think it's really looking deeper and looking deeper in terms of who you are and what makes you up and what is you beyond a personality. Where does your mind begin? Where does your thoughts come from? What's the source of all of that? And then trying to go beyond that to a deeper place.
You mentioned in the article that our thoughts can affect those who are not present. How is that?
So another piece of this puzzle, as we put it together, is understanding that, you know, we live in a world of thought. Everything around you is thought. Everything that has been invented is from somebody's thought. So the chair you're sitting in, the desk you're sitting in, that's somebody's thought. The carpet you walk on, Someone had to think about that. The walls, the doors, you know, everything is thought. And knowing that, that's just one form of thought. Somebody created that and crystallized it into a three-dimensional invention. But beyond that, we are living in our thoughts, and others live in our thoughts as well. And once you understand that, you start taking responsibility for the thought that you send to other people. Of course, people probably can understand this most in the negative, right? We don't want to send negative thoughts to another person because that ends up just impeding us. But even beyond that, it's the benefit of sending positive thoughts out. And, you know, you've probably read those experiments that they've done where they've had a group of people pray for a city. And when that experiment has been done, the crime rates seem to drop during that experiment time. And certainly in the Casey readings, he says that that is a reality, that, you know, a small group of dedicated people praying, which is prayer is thought, a small group of people praying can change the destiny of a city or even a nation. So it's important for us to take responsibility for those thoughts and attune ourselves to the positive thought, to the, you know, life-affirming, what Casey would call the fruits of the spirit. It's putting our energy in that as opposed to putting it in fear and worry and anger and all that stuff that just ends up being constrictive.
You mentioned in the article that thoughts manifest and affect faster and more potently than in the past. Why do you think this is so?
Well, this is just my own personal observation. It really seems, and certainly in having conversations with lots of other people, they seem to be having the same experience. It appears that we have sort of moved into a time right now where things are happening faster. Ideas come into fruition and they blossom quicker, and, you know, movements get started now in a matter of days, where in the past it would have taken years for a movement to get started. If you look at the recent changes that are happening in political structures around the world, this would have been, I mean, just unheard of if we'd have talked about this 20 years ago, that something like this could take place. But not only just on that level, on lots of other levels, things are taking place faster now. Things are moving quicker. And because of that, there's a good and a bad side to that. The negative can perpetuate faster, and so can the positive. The positive can turn into wonderful, great, great things. So it's my belief that right now we're in a time, and some people might think of that as a vibrational shift or something else. I don't know how to categorize that other than just to say that it really does seem like things are moving quicker. And perhaps this is what Mr. Casey was referring to when he said we would be moving into the times and the half times. And perhaps the half times are, you know, speeding things up a little bit. So that's what's going on. And thought has a big part of that in our lives and the world right now.
Why do people close their hearts through various barricades?
Why do they put barricades up?
Yes.
I think it's a way for them to stay immersed in self-consciousness. It keeps the ego safe to do that. This is really true with men in our culture. Women, for the most part, have a much better ability of stepping into the temple of the heart and seeing things from that perspective. But in our culture, men really suffer because the barricades come up with men a lot. And maybe it's some sort of primal protective mechanism to see who's going to be the alpha male, or it's competition, whatever. There's lots of ways to look at it and contextualize it. But men really are the ones who have, I think, the most work to do in terms of removing those barricades. And I can tell you personally, and just the other day I was speaking to somebody and I realized it's been 20 years that I've been doing this. It just seems like I started yesterday. But in 20 years of doing this and having been in the presence of some really, really wonderful teachers that have moved energy into the heart, and you get this feeling that comes over you, the women handle it much better. They're able to take this energy and this sort of what we might would call a kundalini experience as it moves up through the heart. Women can process that better. Men, those barricades come down fast, and it makes you realize just how protected you are as a male in our culture. Once those barricades start coming down, you can see that, wow, I've built not just a small wall, but I've built an entire fortress here. And the spiritual practice is about removing that brick by brick and trying to get into the heart more, trying to get past those barricades that we put up to protect ourselves, to keep us small, erroneously thinking that's going to make us happy. But in reality, it's only by knocking down those walls and removing those bricks and feeling that new sort of awareness. It's only by doing that that you really start appreciating spirit and appreciating your place in the whole plan and what this whole emphasis on living life from the heart and stepping into the heart is about. It's an important transformation, and I really, really emphasize that with men, because we've been sort of socially duped. We bought the lie that that's what it means to be a man. And the truth is, it keeps us from being who we really are supposed to be.
You're going to be at the ARE in Virginia Beach from September 9th to the 11th at the Spiritual Breakthrough Intensive Conference. What will you be covering there?
John Van Auken and I have decided to do an intensive, and the whole emphasis on this is experience. And both John and I have done years of lectures, and lectures are great, and it's sort of intellectual food, and I enjoy it, and reading books and attending lectures and all that feeds the intellect and is a type of food for the mind, and that's wonderful. But what really needs to happen is for us to have a deeper experience. We need to go past just intellectual things and conceptual things.
We'll be right back with more with István Fazekas on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Let's continue our conversation with István Fazekas.
This workshop that we have is... This intensive is really both of us taking our different approaches and leading the participants through things to help them really understand what we've been talking about who they are, how their mind works, what's beyond the mind, what their spiritual awareness is about, what energy is, all of this. And, of course, in the context of an ARE audience, it's the best possible forum for that because you have people that are really committed to this and bring just a wonderful experience and background to it. And I liken it to getting lots of individual batteries and putting them all together and then hooking them all up for one giant battery. And when I've done this before with groups, I mean, it's just been really, really exceptional and something very special.
Well, what will the experience be like for attendees? Will it be interactive?
It's going to be very interactive. It's actually going to be a combination of interactive exercises where you're going to be doing things with participants there, and you'll be doing some introspective work too. So you'll be going within and doing some internal stuff, but you're doing it in the context of this group awareness, this group activity, which is very, very different from doing it on your own. And again, having done this many times with many groups throughout the years, I can tell you, even myself, when I participate in these in a group setting, I notice that there's a difference than what I do with my own personal work and my own personal meditations and introspections. So it's going to be a combination of interaction and activities, exercises, coupled with some really beautiful introspective work that we have planned.
Could you tell us about your most recent book, Edgar Cayce and the Yoga Sutras, Uniting Body, Mind, and Spirit?
This book is, I think, it's a really practical manual for a person to use to incorporate a lot of these principles from the Cayce readings and from Asian philosophy, from the great philosophies of India and Tibet, China, Japan. And it was something that was really a labor of love for me. And just the actual Yoga Sutras part, where I reinterpret the Yoga Sutras kind of from a Cayce perspective, just that section alone, if you were to read that and truly digest that and understand that, that probably has everything that you need in terms of attaining higher consciousness and understanding the big picture. But the rest of the book, of course, is to support that, to try and get into what is it that really transforms us? What are the things that really have the biggest payoff for us in terms of getting the most out of being here in this world?
Well, did Edgar Cayce himself speak about Eastern traditions?
Well, he spoke about meditation. And, of course, you know, in his conscious mind, this would not have been a part of his regular life. I mean, even today in Christian churches, you don't hear people talk about meditation. And in some churches, unfortunately, they vilify it. So he was tapping into meditation. He spoke numerous times in the readings about Om, about the Om vibration and what that's about. And that's a sacred, sacred thing in Indian tradition. So, he weaved in and out of Eastern philosophy and Eastern teachings.
I understand the book covers the steps of enlightenment from the Edgar Cayce readings. Could you explain that?
So, one perspective from the Indian tradition is that there's a systematic approach that you kind of build from one thing on to another thing in terms of changing your consciousness. And I found that working with the Search for God books and working with the readings for these years, Mr. Cayce would come back to certain themes in the same way and sort of create this step-by-step process. So I decided to present my own take on that and show that, you know, meditation and service and fruits of the spirit, how all of that matches up with these ancient Indian philosophies that have transformed millions and millions of people. They are essentially saying the same thing, just using a little bit different language and putting their own special cultural sauce on it. You know?
Now, when you speak about this, it sounds like you have a lot of experience. Could you tell us something about your background, how you've discovered these things?
Well, I was raised by a Roman Catholic father and a Southern Baptist mother. And going to church, at least when I went with my mom and my dad was kicking and screaming to the Protestant churches, to the Baptist churches, but you know, he did it regardless. My experience was, you know, God was kind of an angry cop, and you just didn't want to get God mad at you. So you did a lot of things because you were supposed to, and you didn't want to face punishment. And it just didn't seem like that's what the whole point was supposed to be. Even as a small child, I can remember that just did not seem like the bullseye that we were supposed to be hitting. And it wasn't until I was about 21 and I started encountering these Eastern teachings, and then subsequent to that started going and studying with and being around these Eastern teachers and hearing what they had to say and how they said it and what they taught. It wasn't until then that I I realized that there was another way to get us essentially transformed. And after many, many years of doing that, I came back to Christian teachings, through the Search for God material. And at first I had kind of a reaction against it because it brought back a lot of that sort of judgmental stuff that happened in the early church experiences. But then I started seeing it from a whole different perspective, and I could really appreciate who Christ was and what he was teaching and what he was saying. And it was through these Eastern experiences that brought me back to really appreciating a lot of those teachings and stories and parables that are in the Jewish Bible as well as in the Christian New Testament. And even though I don't think of myself as a particularly committed to a particular religious thing, I can appreciate the truth that's found in there. And I think Mr. Casey's work had a very big part in bringing me back to that and having me really understand it with a whole new set of eyes and ears.
Well, when did you first learn about Edgar Casey?
It would have been about over 20 years now. And I was taken to a study group. Somebody brought me to a study group to, I was already interested in metaphysical things. And my mother had a very powerful life-after-death experience. My father had experiences, too, even though he would probably think of himself as an atheist. But he was nonetheless had these very profound spiritual experiences that he couldn't explain. So I had an interest for this already, and I went to the Search for God group and just realized that if I stuck with this enough, I got something from it. And it didn't dawn on me how powerful it was until maybe about 2 years of doing this every week, going every week, that the leader of the group, wonderful, wonderful mentor of mine named Ed Rocks, he said to me, he goes, "Do you realize how much you've changed in the last 2 years?" And I said, "No, I don't think I've changed," because he goes, "You have changed a lot. You were way more intense back then, and in 2 years, a lot of transformations have happened with you." And so that's when I realized I was on the right track and continued to work with it and augment it with all these great Eastern teachers and teachers from India.
Could you tell us about consciousness transformation?
Yeah, that's a huge subject. Consciousness transformation, I mean, to me, that's the bullseye. That's why we're here. We're here to understand what consciousness is. We're here to understand what our mind does and how it does it. We're here to use whatever power we've been given, whatever gifts we've been given, to help others. All of that is part of consciousness, and certainly from Mr. Casey's perspective in the readings, Christ consciousness to him is the penultimate goal. In the East, in India, they might think of it as Krishna consciousness, and Krishna is kind of playful, and Krishna is kind of fun and joyful and happy, all of that. And most people probably wouldn't think of Christ consciousness as being happy until you see in the readings that he says that Jesus, the historical Jesus, laughed often, right? That's not a perspective that we get from the traditional Christian teachings of Jesus.
We'll be right back with more with István Fazekas on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with István Fazekas.
But consciousness transformation is the essential thing that we are here to figure out, is who we are on a deeper level, who we are as a spirit, how our mind works, and how to expand into that in greater ways.
And I was wondering really quickly, you have a book on the alkalizing diet. Could you tell us what inspired you? That seems to be separate from your philosophical book. Could you tell us what inspired you to write the alkalizing diet book?
Well, I have been teaching for quite a number of years in technical colleges, and one of my most popular classes was my nutrition class, because I delve into things beyond just a traditional nutritional syllabus that a person would get, you know, in sort of standard training. And through one thing led to another eventually, and ARE wanted someone to write something with a little bit more of a Casey perspective on it, and of course that was a perfect fit for me because I have used and still use the Casey remedies, and they're just brilliant and they're wonderful. I understood his view of diet. I understood other views of diet, traditional Chinese medicine and Indian Ayurveda and the regular sort of Western paradigm that we have with diet and food. And so this was a chance for me to kind of tie all that together. And even though the book is called The Alkalizing Diet, I'm not really promoting a diet. So, and people that have read the book know that. It's really more about an approach to food. It's about having lots of different options at your disposal. And my approach is to get you to experiment, to try different things out, see what works for you. I don't say there's one way that's supposed to fit everybody equally. I don't believe that's true with food and diet. I don't believe that's true with spirituality. I don't believe that's true with religion. You've got to apply it, try it out, you know, see how it works for you, and make changes as you have to so that it's a good fit. And so that's part of the alkalizing diet. It's giving people lots of different options and ways to look at doing things and make good choices. I mean, you know, we've been talking about spiritual things, but of course your physical health is very important too, because it's very difficult to concentrate on cosmic consciousness if your spleen is in trouble, or, you know, you've got chronic low back pain, or you've got other health issues. You know, you're perpetually drawn into focusing on the temporal as opposed to going past that when your body is distressed. So you've got to do things to keep the physical house, physical costume in good condition. That's essential to being able to get into deeper spiritual states.
Oh, yes. Well, thanks for coming on the show today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much.
And now it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Kimberly Rose. Kimberly Rose is the host of the radio show Interviews with Kimberly Rose on CBS Sky Radio on Thursdays from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern. She'll also be speaking at the upcoming conference, Be Your Own Psychic. It's the Edgar Casey Legacy, from October 19th to the 23rd at the ARE in Virginia Beach. To find out more, go to edgarcasey.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. Well, hello.
Hi.
And what's today's thought for the day?
Today's thought for the day is reading 281:59. Keep that awareness of His presence, for as He hath given, lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. And though there may be abroad hate, avarice, selfishness, and those things that make men afraid, be still within thine own heart, thine own consciousness, and know that He is with thee. I think that this is so important, Art, that if we know that, you know, it's like footprints in the sand, that a lot of people get in this fear of that they're alone. And so then they get attached to relationships. They get attached to all kinds of things that, because they're really fearful of themselves. But if you know that God is within you and you are never alone, that, and that God's within everyone, that even if you have an argument with someone and they go away, you can really come to a consciousness that they're not gone, that they're still with you, because our souls are connected. And when we pray and we have faith, we truly have faith, we really surrender the things that take us away from the true knowledge of God within. So, you know, you get the hate, the selfishness, I'm mad at you. Most of all, it's because somebody, you feel like somebody's not with you and they're not doing what you want them to do or what you think is best for them. But when you trust and you allow yourself, allow people to process and honor and go through what they need to go through, what happens is you get to that stillness within your own heart. And you just say, hey, you know what? They may not be here in my life, but they still are because God connects us all. And to I've set an intention, and that intention is of still point, and that's to really release anger, release jealousy, release the judgment. There's a freedom that comes so that I can feel God on all levels of my being. And that is a challenge. That can be a challenge. It's a challenge in, like, when you see somebody doing something and you want to correct them because you think you know a better way. Well, what makes you know that you know the better way? To me, it's more of just closing my eyes and just talking to God and just knowing that God says, and Jesus said that God is within us. So if I have that much faith and trust that my light might shine on this more than my mouth in judgment.
Mm. Oh, yes. And thanks for doing the thought for the day today.
Thank you. Have a blessed day.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to István Fazekas for talking to us. He will be speaking at the upcoming Spiritual Breakthrough Retreat from September 9th to the 11th. To find out more, go to edgarcasey.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences. Thanks to Kimberly Rose for the thought for the day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce.